Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Oh, boy, do I know some lyrics to that one. Just terrible. I wish I had a better mind. You want to hear those lyrics? Well, for those of you who'd like to sing the real Jingle Bells, as rewritten by Company K, the 3167 Signal Corps, Mess Kit Airborne Repair Battalion, I'd be glad to send them to you. Just send your name and address to The Genuine Truth. Of course, you have to be over 21 and an accredited art student. Jingle bells, jingle bells. Straight up. Nutty season. Absolutely. That's one of the things I dig about Christmas time coming up. All the innate and deeply hidden total nuttiness of us begins to come out. Right now, at this very minute, there's probably more indescribable, obscene junk that is being packed away in department stores for people to buy. If they were in their right mind, they'd never buy anything like this. Believe me. In fact, for example, a friend of mine, he bought a foam rubber water hydrant. Now, what do you think it does? Curious what a foam rubber water hydrant does? You know, red water hydrant. Well, you put a bottle of scotch in it. Okay? Put a bottle of scotch in it. And then when you want to, you know, a little nip of scotch, what you do is it's got a little thing on it, and you get a wrench with it. And you take the wrench, and you put it on top, and you move it like that, and it squirts the scotch into your waiting glass. Now, isn't that a nice thing to have? And he gave it to a friend of his for Christmas. That poor friend. Well, this is the nutty season. And tonight, as a public service, and I've always felt this, I strongly feel it, I will always feel this, that you shall know a society through the games it plays. Not through the books it reads or the movies it watches, but the games it plays. You know that there's a growing field of archaeology and anthropology, which is connected with the study of games throughout all of recorded history, and even before prehistory. It tells a lot. As a matter of fact, to give you an idea, one of the tribes of the Yucatan area, for example, had a game back in its days that was fought. It was almost like basketball, and they had like a hoop, and these two sides would be chosen up, and they would fight like Billy be damned, you know, to get this little bag of whatever it was, rocks or something with leather cover through this hoop. And the one that got it through the hoop, they don't know the exact rules, either the most number of times or the first, won, of course. The other side then, are you ready for this, friends, was sacrificed by the side who won with ceremonial daggers. Well, that told a lot about that society. No, can you imagine if the Jets are playing the Washington Redskins, and the Washington Redskins beat them, let's say 22-19, at that point then they wheel out the ceremonial execution blocks, and all the Washington Redskins are given their ceremonial dagger. And they go down the line, whack, and the crowd cheers. Holy smokes. Well, all right. So what about the games? And every Christmas, you really see the games. You know, all millions of games show up. And I'm talking about the games that real, just ordinarily walking around people. And there's fantastic nuttiness in them. And the game urge is a deep-seated urge. Nobody knows exactly what it's about. So don't send me your Ph.D. thesis. Nobody has yet been able to discover why man, among all the animals, has a desire to play these goofy games. And the games are getting to be more and more surreal. And you know what? One of the things I think that, about our life, I think as our life gets more unreal in many respects, we tend to mock our own lives by making games out of them. That's why so many satirical movies are out about America and so forth. I think they're making game of it. Even though it's totally untrue, you know, you won't recognize a genuine American in a million films like Peter Fonda, but it's a game. It's a game. And it's a game that makes you feel good about it. And so, Tony, would you please give me some Eternal Search for Beauty music? Is it connected with that search for beauty, for truth, for meaning, for plot? Bring it up, big Tony. Yes. As mankind marches down the endless staircase of time and history, as he bears his banners of defeat and victory, high and blows the trumpets to the heavens, proclaiming his primacy over all that he surveys. Man, the center of the universe. Aren't you glad you could have been born a squirrel, friend? In fact, there are some religions that say if you louse up in this world, you're liable to be born a squirrel the next time around. Some buy it, some don't. But you could have been born a turtle. Turtles are born, you know. You're mankind. The Lord of all creation. Now let us take a look at some of the games. Just keep that behind me, Tony. Gives a nice frame to the game of existence. Let's take a look at some of the games that are now available for this Christmas. Journeys of St. Paul. Making colorful use of Mediterranean geography, Journeys of St. Paul traces the adventure-filled path of St. Paul and his buddies. Titus and Timothy, his buddies. From Damascus to Rome, collecting the 14 epistles along the way. Game also includes colorful 16-page documentary of St. Paul's life. You, too, can be St. Paul on his famous odyssey. Play the game Journeys of St. Paul. How about that one? I suppose they're going to come out next year with a game called Judas. You, too, can betray the Lord and be the... Listen to this one. Year of the Lord. Since the church calendar encompasses the whole life of Christ, this makes a wonderful racetrack. Through Advent into Christmas, off again to Epiphany, around the corner to Easter, and circling the board finally to Pentecost. Yes, an exciting game. Some wins, some lose. Making these up. Move two spaces past Easter. Go back to Pentecost. You've lost. And here are games for those of you who have a deep streak of the predator inside of your makeup. Here's one. This is a kind of a fun game. C&O, B&O, the game of railroading. Authentic game based on the actual combined systems of the Chesapeake and Ohio and Baltimore and Ohio railroads. Players compete against each other, as well as the elements, floods, derailments, collisions, mountain slides, etc., to earn the most revenue. Contains 97 real-life trains. Perfect game for those of you who enjoy train wrecks. How about that one? I bet there's a game right in the works now called General Motors. The object is to crush Ford, counteract their new Mustang, fight off Ralph Nader, and win through to 27.5% profits. Thank you, Tony. You're the Lord. You listen to this one. You think that's good. There's even better ones than that. Oh, man. Yeah, you can... You know that they have games now based on various battles. You know that, don't you? You can play Africa Corps. Your friend can be Rommel and you can be Montgomery. How about Anzio? That's a fun battle. I'll tell you, there's a lot of... You imagine some poor guy, you know, that spent 19 days on the beach, flat out, dug in with the shrapnel going over him, and one of his aunts says, well, I thought you'd like that game, Anzio. After all, you were there. You'd love it. You want to hear one of the wildest games I've ever heard of? Get that thing on there, Tony. Get a little more of that. I'll tell you, that's a little scratchy. Do you have a... I don't know how that got scratched. It's a new record. Put on any one of the other cuts. Any one of the other... Oh, that's good. That's good. There's Mankind marching. Yes, a new exciting game for teenagers and adults as well. Dirty Water. Each player is a water pollution official in charge of a lake that needs a proper ratio of certain organisms to be ecologically balanced. You learn about various types of water polluters, each causing a specific type of pollution. You experience the problems facing real pollution control officials, priority decisions, threats of pollution from an upstream community, finances, etc. The player who first stocks his lake with the correct ratio of organisms wins. Oh, by the way, colorful pieces include algae, weeds, bass, etc. Draw two pieces of algae. Move that to third degree pollution. Or you can play Smog. An exciting game, Smog and other dirty water games acquaint 2 to 4 players with many of the complexities and obstacles which an administrator meets in controlling water and air pollution in his community or lake. Smog illustrates the complex problem of air pollution. Each player is termed air quality manager in his city and learns about actual abatement and pollution control techniques. The player who first earns 2,000 management credits is the best manager of a city's resources and wins. Smog includes 19.5-inch square game board, hundreds of pegs, smoke plumes, rings, outrageous fortune cards, play money, dies, pads, and letters to Ralph Nader. Wait till I come out with a game called Ralph Nader. Investigate the hamburger industry. Now, that illustrates something, I think, one of the major curses of our time. I would hate to be a kid and get a game like that. You know, there's a certain kind of parent who believes everything that a kid does must be, and this is in big quotes, educational. Even play, you know, educational. And I can just see a lot of ants saying, well, that's a very nice game. Smog, yes, we'll make little Charlie very aware of the pollutants. Oh, the poor little kid, you know, his head is, but what he really wants, you know, is a fire truck or something, you know, and he gets a Smog. Here's one. How would you like a detergent test kit for Christmas? There it is, right there. This is WOR, speaking of pollution, New York. And we're polluting something here, but I don't know quite what. Is there such a thing as electronic pollution? Yes, indeed. Of course, it's all in the ear of the beholder. Well, let's put it this way. It's in the voice coil of the detector. George, hit the ding-dong there. What the heck is this?
Poverty, ignorance.
Oh, I see.
Pain, hunger, sadness, loss of self-respect, disease, false idols, hate. These are the reasons why people fight. These are also the reasons why the Peace Corps is in Ghana and India and Colombia and 49 other countries. The job of a Peace Corps volunteer is to give people a chance to develop dignity. To give people a chance to know they can do a job well. To give people a chance to be proud. To give people a chance at a better life. In short, to give people a chance. This is how the Peace Corps works for peace. Would you like to work for peace? You may be qualified. Write the Peace Corps in Washington for an application.
Speaking of Christmas, we got old Nat Sherman with us tonight. And if you're scouting around looking for a Christmas gift for your old buddy... Oh, some idiotic psychiatrist wrote us a letter, very badly scrawled. I don't believe he's a real psychiatrist. He couldn't have. And he's angry about pipes as some kind of a sexual fetish, which shows he's got problems. As a matter of fact, I must quote Freud here in this connection, doctor. Dr. Freud once... When he loved to smoke cigars, and Dr. Freud appeared at a meeting of famous psychiatrists who all gathered to honor him, and he's smoking a cigar. And he looked around the crowd. He says, "Gentlemen, it is wise for you to remember it's also a very good cigar." And I must say the same thing. But however, for those of you who have somebody around who is a pipe cuckoo, who enjoys a good pipe, I would like to suggest Nat Sherman at 1400 Broadway. It's between 38th and 39th, and they have a fantastic collection of them. And you can even get your own design down there if you like yours in the shape of a Con Ed smokestack or something. So you can celebrate Ecology Day. You can get that. You can. They'll make one for you that way. But this is Nat Sherman. They've been there for a long time, and they're at the corner of 38th Street, between 38th and 39th on Broadway, 1400. Old Nat. You know, I have found that parents, and it's just a casual observation, not being the parent type, but I've observed millions, that the parents who buy their kids educational games and stuff like that are rarely people with any sense of humor at all. No sense of humor. In fact, this is generally the hallmark of a crusader. I've never known a crusader yet who could laugh at anything except the other guy once in a while. Never his particular crusade and himself is sacrosanct. It's very, very important. You just don't laugh at him. In fact, the other night, crusaders come in all shapes. Do you remember the other night I did a little thing on about union leaders? All I did was do my impressions of their voices. Oh, I got an angry letter immediately. This guy, in other words, it's very fine to satirize other people. Don't ever satirize me, friend. that's forget it. But nevertheless, this is, I think, the educational game psychology. And if you dig that kind of stuff, but you know, it can be carried to unbelievably ridiculous lengths. Do you know what's going on in London? Did you hear about the big hoopla that's going on in London over the educational toys? Listen to this one. London. It's going on right this minute, man, and they are really, carrying on. The Christmas shopping season is off to a, quote, revolting, and, quote, obscene start in Britain. Or at least that's how the giant controversy going on now over children's horror toys is being described in various public quarters here in London. It all began with the discovery of a human transplant game. How do you like that one? A human transplant game, complete with essential spare body parts. The box top invites youngsters, quote, trade them, collect them, transplant them. You see this kid say, I'll trade you two pancreases for a liver. And it's insane. For a little more than 9 cents a kit, parents can buy their kiddies plastic replicas of hearts, eyes, tongues, lips, lungs, fingers, and feet. Thumbs, noses, ears, livers, and teeth are also available. How's that for a cozy little collection to hang with the tinsel on the Christmas tree? Shouted one London newspaper. You haven't heard the rest of it, friends. Are you ready to get sick now? To make the game more interesting and realistic and more educational for the kids, the toy manufacturers covered the severed limbs with blood. This apparently helps children understand the difficulties of amputation. That reminds me of the so-called anything you want to sell, anything today that appeals to the purient. And let's face it, sadism is one of the more purient of our deep-seated desires. The desire to see blood and gore is certainly purient. Anything that appeals to the purient today, and this is one of the great hypocrisies of our time, I find it makes very funny, is always labeled educational. It's educational. And so you go to see this movie, and it's an old-fashioned stag film. You know, these people are rolling around and yelling and hollering on a sack there, and it's very clinical, and it's in full color. It's called educational. You've seen that. Some guy wrote me a note. He says, a friend of his, he says, oh, was he bugged? A friend of his went to this educational Danish film that turned out to be about algebra. Was he bugged? But this problem with the games, I suppose it all started with Monopoly. I don't know. But the only game that I really remember outside of Monopoly as a kid was a game that I got from and I guess this, all of these games are variations on a racetrack. Every game is a variation on a racetrack. You know, it has a spinner. It has a spinner. It has dice. And so you go around a track. You've seen these things. It says move forward three spaces. And you hit the little spinner. And then it says move forward four spaces. You move your little thing four spaces. Well, I remember a game that absolutely got me as a kid. We got so hung on it that we played to the point where my mother finally just had to throw the thing in the furnace and forget it. Because we got really hung on it. We were playing it in the dark. Now, I don't know why. We were playing this game. It got us so much that we would play, me and my kid brother would play this game under the covers at night with a flashlight. Like at 3 in the morning, we're supposed to be asleep. And it was a game called the 500. The Indianapolis 500. And it had a board, you know, like they all, this is called a board game in the trade, see? And it had a board. And the board was a reproduction on the board of the Indianapolis track. You know, it's an oval track, right? It's really, that game is an automatic game. The whole concept of the race is automatically a game right there. So it had a track, and it had a start line. It had, the starting pagoda and all that stuff. And it was a picture of the Indianapolis racetrack. And it came with a little box of race cars. And everybody would pick his little race. There's a little metal race cars. There was a green one, a yellow one, a blue one. And they were all different shapes. And they were great little race cars. And I remember I picked this purple one. It was always mine. I always played with the purple one. My brother played with the green one. And the old man would play with a red one. And we had these little race cars with a spinner. And I don't know what there was about that game. But there was something that caught the thing. Now, I'm not so sure that games of that type are things that girls play a great deal. I don't recall ever seeing girls seriously play board games. Now, I'm going to get deluged with angry letters. I've been thinking about that, all this woman's lib stuff, which is a lot of interesting stuff going on in women's lib, and I've been reading their literature and stuff. And I think it was inevitable that women's lib would have to come along. I mean, the form it's taken, which is angry. Angry and almost, in a sense, self-deprecatory, where people wear ugly clothes and they let their hair fly all over the place, angry. And it was almost inevitable. I think that any great movement in a society produces, inevitably, a counter-movement. In other words, if you're living in a very permissive society, which is, a movement, permission, it will also develop a counter-movement, which is repressive. That there's always a plus for every negative and a negative for every plus. Now, that's just a theory I've had for a long time, and I've seen it in life so often, that whenever you develop a society that is altruistic, there is in that society also a totally decadent strain, which is, in a sense, the other side. It's like mid-Victorian. They were so proper and prim with their morals, and at the same time, there were a lot of other stuff going on, which is, pretty fantastic stuff on the other side. And this is really almost a rule of thumb. And so we're living in a totally sex-conscious age. Everybody's talking about sex, sex movies, sex. Oh, I'm sure there's going to be sex games for kids now, sex education, complete with various plastic parts of the anatomy that can be used for sexual education and so on. And we're living in a very sex-hung country. And, well, it's not really just our country. It's the whole Western world is really hung on sex right now. Everywhere you go. Well, in Europe, pornographic magazines, well, pornography is the major, it's really almost the major product of Denmark today. Sold on the street just like we buy, anything else. And it's sex-drenched. Well, so what results from a society or a time where you have pro-sex? Naturally, an anti-sex movement has started. And I suspect, and I'm going to get millions of letters, that the lib movement is basically anti-sex. Now, I'm going to get a lot of letters denying it vehemently, but I'm not going to be convinced because I've been around too many of them. Sex was looked upon as exploitation, all that stuff. They're not using morality as being anti-sex. They're using, quote, oppression. So whatever you say, you're against it. I mean, I don't care what the reasons are. So I suspect that this is just a natural outgrowth of a sexually oriented time, that there would be growth of people who are anti-sex. Anti-sex. And they wouldn't take that specific name, but in effect, this is what it winds up being. And I'm not against women's lib. Fine. If you buy it, good. That's your theme. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm just making a sideline comment. And I think this is all connected with the seriousness people take things to. I mean, the idea that we should have a game called Smog. You imagine sitting down playing Smog for a couple of hours. Hey, I want a game out of Dirty Water. What do you say? Come on. Oh, come on. I could take you anytime. You don't know nothing about algae. Come on, let's sit down. And anyway, we got hung on this game, the Indianapolis game, and it was me and Schwartz, my kid brother, and Bruner. All four of us, every waking minute we are playing this game. We had only four people could play it. And we'd sit there with the four little cars at the beginning of the track, say beginning, starting line. You start spinning the thing, and of course, right off the bat, you could lose. I think that's one of the great things about this game, that you could really lose this game. Like you hit the spinner, it says you have just crashed. You're out of the race, and it could cause a terrible trauma. And I remember we'd start this game. We'd play this game for hour after hour after hour after hour. We'd play it over and over again. And it was during that game, playing that game, that I began to suspect something which most Americans don't even want to concede. Luck. Luck plays a fantastic role in everybody's life. And, we don't like to admit that. You agree with that, Tony? Because we like to believe we can control our lives. A lot of people really, they want to believe that if they pray or if they keep themselves clean or if they do push-ups, that they will somehow avoid problems. If they buy insurance. Yeah, have you noticed those crazy insurance ads that keep coming on? And they keep saying, you'll want safety, security. You mean to tell me buying insurance gives a guy a sense of security? Seems to me. I don't know. I've often wondered about that idea. A sense of security. You mean to tell me if you buy insurance, you may not get a heart attack? Is that what you mean? I don't know. But this is the way people think. So who's going to argue with them? But nevertheless, I think that the games, many ways, reflect a lot of our fears. They reflect a lot of the excitements that we want secretly in our lives. And we used to play this game called 500. We played this night after night, day after day, until Friday one day. Actually, it was one night. It was about 4 a.m. Me and my kid brother under the bed there, playing with the lights, and we hear these feet coming. We try to hide it, and she says, "This game." She said, "I'm through with this game." It was a Christmas present. Guess who gave it to us? My mother. We got it for Christmas from my old man. She says, "This game, I've had enough of this." She says, "You don't do anything but play this game." She says, "You're ruining your eyes, and I'm not going to have you ruin your eyes at 4 o'clock in the morning playing this idiotic game." She says, "Now you're all through now. I told you, I warned you." And she grabs the game and down the basement she goes zap into the fire. A lot of yelling. And we forgot it. The next day it's all over. We forgot all about the game. But these games really get to you. And I know that, I'm sure that there's going to be a game come out. And they generally now today, because nobody plays a game for fun anymore. I mean, just fun. You play a game, you learn about water pollution. You learn about conservation of natural resources in playing a game. You take the Odyssey of St. Peter. Oh, boy, that'd be a good one, wouldn't it? And you play that thingy. Well, I suspect that there will be, before the year's out, a game called Woman's Lib. Yes, a game for girls between the ages of 4 and 12. Learn all the wonderful cliches. The heap calumny on your local mail. And then there will be another one called Gay Liberation. Learn all the in and out. And there's already a game called Vietnam. They call it Nam. Yes. Counteract propaganda from North Vietnamese agents. It's all exciting. It's all part of the James Bond syndrome of our time. Everything's a joke and a yard wide. And I'm sure that there'll be a game called Black Panther. Yes, made from the selected writings of Eldridge Cleaver. This new exciting game, which is bringing the roses to the cheeks of all liberals everywhere, is a game which 2 to 4 can play, complete with little pig statues and the whole bit. But I can see it in the wind. You can now buy yourself, and I did this in my show. It's getting to the point where you can't make a funny remark without it coming true in the next 12 minutes. In my show down at the Fortune a couple of nights ago, I was doing this whole thing about how people are going to eventually wind up with applause machines and that in their house. You know, ego is getting so fantastic now that people all think of themselves as playing a role. It's a part, it's showbiz. And that's why, of course, we can play games with serious things. It's why we can play games with things like smog, that you can buy a game called Auto Wreck. That's right. And it's a stretch of the turnpike. And you go from one exit to the next. And if you make it from one exit, like, say, exit 1 to exit 15 without having a wreck, you won the game. And that's kind of exciting. You can make repairs, you can have flat tire and all that stuff. And if you make it to the next exit without having a wreck, you're the winner. Well, what does this show? It shows a lot of fear, a lot of frustration. And if you can make it into a game, you're kind of safe. Well, I think that games, now there's two kinds of games. There's the vicarious game, which people play when they watch. Speak of games, by the way, I've noticed. Have you noticed the rash of expose pieces by football players and baseball players and all that stuff? You know, so forth. People love to read this kind of stuff. You see, whether it's true or not doesn't make any difference. And I can tell you, for one thing, a guy who, and generally this stuff is read by people who have always felt inferior in the face of athletes. They love it. Little skinny guys, you know, who never got called out to play third base. He loves to read a book called Third Baseman Are Finks by the ex-third baseman of the Detroit Tigers, who rips aside the sham of third base playing and shows that all third basemen are foul-mouthed louts. And he loves this, you see, because every time a guy writes a book that puts down a sport, the reviewers love it. Because the thing that makes a guy a book reviewer is interesting in the first place. From the time he was 9, he just wasn't on the team. I just know that. And he wound up writing for the literary journal, you know, at Pitcairn High. And so his enemy was always the athlete. And so he loved to find this going on. And I just wonder, you know, whether or not you'd get very far writing a book called Literary Critics Are Finks, written by an ex-literary critic. Yes, the literary critic world is full of idiotic finks who gather around and sit there and titter and yell and pinch each other's behinds, and they have nothing but fun. And I just wonder how far it would go, or whether they dig it. So part of our world today is playing games like that. And did you read? There was a piece in the paper recently by this lineman, and he played with I think it was Dave Herman. Anyway, big lineman, Earthquake. And he was commenting about a book by a lineman, a linebacker, who was proved the football is rotten game. He said, I remember playing against him, and I think he was right in his case. And which I thought was a good line. So most of these looks inside books are often written by guys who have a bitterness against the game itself, generally because they didn't quite make it. Fountain is a genuine case in point. Who had one good year, maybe a half a good year after that, and from that time he was always an also-ran. Everybody felt sorry for him. He got bugged. It really makes you mad at a game. I remember, who was the guy wrote the book, he was the pitcher for the Reds. Oh, yeah, Brosnan. I remember Brosnan, who was always overweight. And, yeah, he was. And I remember Brosnan one night out at Shea. I was out at Shea Stadium when somebody laid down a bunt, and he fell off the mound trying to field it. See, he fell off the mound. He's laying flat. The runners are running all around him. And here the ball is laying right in front of him. And to show you how what a fiasco it was, the third baseman had to come all the way in and field the ball, which was between home plate and the pitcher's mound. And the next week, Brosnan came out with a stinging indictment of baseball. Oh, well. It's part and parcel, I suppose, of envy plays a great role in our lives. And we don't often recognize it as such. Not many people, you know, recognize the fact that that the reason that they read magazines that, like, you know, the confidential type, is because they secretly envy the guy that they want to see pilloried in the magazine. That envy is a real driving force. In fact, I saw a sad case one day, and it can be really destructive. I saw a review in one of the major newspapers in New York, really major review. And it was a review of a book, and it just blasted, you know, just one of those kind of reviews that's so embarrassing. Like, why do they let illiterate people like this write such claptrap? And, you know, it goes on. Well, the sad fact of it is behind it. A lot of people don't know what goes behind a thing like this. But what was behind this review? I'll tell you. I know both parties. That the writer of the review, like most reviewers, was a disappointed writer. Many guys who become play reviewers are disappointed playwrights, quite often disappointed actors, but generally playwrights. Anyway, this guy was a disappointed novelist. And why did he blast that particular book? Fascinating story. He was reviewing the book that was written by an editor who had rejected his novel. Now, did the readers know that? Of course not. But he just took it apart. And in fact, for weeks after that, he would refer to it in his other reviews about other things. You know, he just wouldn't let a dead horse lie. He just attacked that book. Well, you can't separate the human from what he does. You really can't. And I just wonder when they're going to come up with a game called Envy. Yes, the green-eyed monster. Destroy your friends. Annihilate them. And you could play Vituperation. It's kind of a good game. Or Demagoguery, which is always fun. A little double-handed game of demagoguery. You can play George Wallace. One guy can play Jerry Rubin. Another guy can be Agnew. And another guy can play demagoguery and exchange cliches. Exchange blasts, name calling, but I just am curious how much in our world does envy play a role. In fact, if you really read seriously about Hitler, you discover that one of the great motivating factors in Hitler's life was envy. Oh, he was burned up by envy continually. First of all, he always envied people who had an education, hated them. And in addition to that, he envied, would you believe it, he envied army officers. This is one of the reasons why he took over the army. He just ran the whole thing himself, you know, totally amateur, just completely made fantastically idiotic decisions. because he had always been a corporal. And now he was at last in a position of getting his back. And he was kicking generals around. Envy. And I'm curious just how much envy plays a role in your, you know, your daily life. Just daily life. I wonder how many people will not like a show because somebody on the show reminds them of somebody who knows them out once in something. Girls, men, who knows? Envy. Just anything, Tony. Envy. There it comes. Any, just to turn on any one of them. There you go. Yeah. We'll let you out there for a minute. Think about your envy. Kill it, Tony. There you go. Very good. Well, see what happened? In fact, you know what my mother used to say? When you'd get hoarse, you notice that I've got a cold. It's pretty obvious. So don't worry about it. It's not your radio. It's my voice. You know what she used to say? She had a great line. Whenever I get hoarse, you know, you get a cold, you start getting hoarse. And she's hanging over the sink. This is old wives' tale, see? And she's got a Brillo pad in her hand. She's hanging over the sink. And I come in. I'm like, wife, am I? I'm getting a peanut butter sandwich. And she'd say, you know what they say about people who get hoarse like that? I'd say, no. What do you mean? So, well, you must have been saying bad things. That's God's way of treating people who say bad stuff. Yeah. So who knows? You know, it may be true with me. Did you ever hear that expression, Tony? Oh, sure. God's way of teaching you. And so I used to work on being hoarse. I'd go around the house once in a while. I'd needle my mother. I'd constantly needle her that way. Hey, Mom. I was going through my ventriloquist phase at that time, too. I bought this device that said, throw your voice. It had a little ad, you know, that showed this kid carrying a suitcase on his back. And out of the suitcase was coming this voice that said, help, 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 let me out. And I was working on that. You probably wondered whether I was successful or not, right? Who do you think does the Barry Farber show? There's no real Barry Farber, don't you know that? Well, one of the greatest ventriloquists I know, though, is a fantastic ventriloquist, is Peggy Fitzgerald. Now, she really is talented. You know, a lot of people don't know that Peggy plays the Ed part on that show. And, if you didn't know it, you wouldn't see her lips move. You'd just have to know it, you know, and watch her carefully. And she really knows how to do it. So, friends, it's not hard. You know, you can get a game called Play Radio. I'm sure you can. In fact, that's what we're doing here. This is not a real radio station here. We're just playing radio. We got this game for Christmas 5 years ago, and, you know, we hooked it up, and the damn thing works, and we're having a lot of fun here. So join us tomorrow night, you know, at the same time, and together we'll play radio. Maybe play chicanery, too, while we're at it. Play ad agency. And, you know, you get little plastic martinis and all that stuff, little credit cards. A lot of fun.